The rumors are true. I will holler, scream, shout, yell, jump up and down. I will call you dummies. Some of you will cry. But there's a reason for that. Ladies and gentlemen, the master, George Alston.
Hi, everybody. I'm here today with the one and only George Alston. Hi, George.
Hello.
How's it going there?
It's as well as can be expected with this virus stuff, but...
You two are keeping busy, though? Marianne's good?
Oh, yeah. I rebuilt. I did some stuff. I did some handiwork in the house, all my honey-do lists and all that, which Marianne's really good at creating, you know, so...
Good. And Marianne's good, then?
Yeah, she's good. Yeah, she's bored as hell, so we jump in the car and go down to Assateague Seashore and see the beach and whatever, which is about 5 miles away. So,
well, that's nice. Yeah, I go for drives myself.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna ask you some basic questions. I'm glad you agreed to join us, though, George. I'm really excited about this one. Can you tell me, George, how did you get involved in dogs?
When I was born, blind in my left eye. And my father didn't want me to participate in contact sports, which did not preclude me from playing sandlot hockey, sandlot football, whatever, without pads, which he never knew about. But he decided to get me involved in dogs. Our next-door neighbor bred standard poodles. At the Champaign, Illinois show, when I was 8.5 years old, I showed a standard poodle in junior showmanship because we were allowed to do it. And that was in 1947.
Okay.
That was a couple years ago.
A few, yep. So that got you involved. Your dad got you involved then, basically.
Yeah, my dad, actually the whole family did. The name of our breed, we ended up breeding boxers. Our original handler when we were out in Illinois was Larry Downey.
Oh, wow.
And Phil Marsh. And along the way, George Rude showed for us. And we also had Gordon Barton, who was Connie Barton's husband. Great boxer handlers, by the way, all of them.
Yeah. Wow.
And I showed boxers in juniors. I worked as crate boy for Nate Levine, Roy Holloway, Gordon Barton. And it's, ironic that I worked as a crate boy for Roy Holloway, and yet his son came to work for me and apprenticed under me.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
But it's, I was very lucky to come along when I did. My father bought some very good dogs. He bought a bitch from the breeders of Duke of Highwind, which was being campaigned same time as Bangaway was. And it was Duke of Highwind's little sister. Her name was High Winds Duke's Triumph. And, High Winds Zach's Triumph. And so we bred some of that, got involved with Joe Gregory. His clients sold us a couple boxers. And, that's how it all got started.
So when you first walked in the ring with a standard poodle, though?
Yeah, it was with a standard poodle, and it's ironic. My first all-breed best in show was with a standard poodle.
I thought it was a miniature poodle.
You're right. I'm sorry. Yeah. It was a.
I have the picture, so you're holding it. It's got to be a miniature poodle.
I'm not that big, no. But it's ironic that my first best in show was with a poodle, and a lot of my first best in shows with poodles. I had some with some sporting dogs, but I sure just about everything, I guess.
Yeah, you did. Okay, so you won juniors at the Garden. What year was that?
1954, the same year that Ted Young went best in show with Rise and Shine.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And the two days before was American Boxer Club specially. I was 14, and I'm showing our specials dog, Champion Barmer's Talisman, who was Bangaway's first champion. And it was that I was very fond because as a kid younger than that, I worked for Nate Levine. I got to groom Bangaway. I had my hands on Bangaway.
That's incredible.
And you think also too, I helped groom as a kid Rock Falls Colonel, the English setter. You know, right there we're talking 200 and some old breed best in shows between the two dogs. So, and what I learned, judges such as Alva Rosenberg was in our house for dinner many times. So was Nate Levine, and a lot of great dog people.
Wealth of knowledge there.
So I was showing my boxer special at American Boxer Club, and it came down, Mr. Wagner was judging boxers, a very famous boxer breeder from Illinois. It came down between Larry Downey with Spark Plug and me. And here this little kid is out there against Larry Downey, one of the greats, you know. He did his own thing. Nobody ever showed a dog like Larry Downey did, you know. And I don't think anybody could copy what he did. And so there's Joe Gregory and Bob Forsyth giving me hints. Hey, kid, do this. Hey, kid, do that. Well, it ended up that somebody said it was like 25, 30 minutes between the two of us. And I'm following Joe Gregory's order, some other hammer who happened to be close, and damn near won that son of a bitch.
That's okay.
You can cut that out.
No, it stays. That's you.
We went up to the Garden in a pickup truck. We lived on a farm in Virginia, and a homemade crate in the back of the pickup truck, and the dog and I are up front sitting in the seat going into New York. I had never been to New York. And I had my brand new Sears and Roebuck catalog suit and squeaky Sears and Roebuck shoes that squeaked. And my suit was too big, as you can see, you'll see in the picture on the thing. And all the kids made fun of me because I talk so funny. Because being from Virginia, I mean, I had an accent in those days that you could cut it with a butter knife, you know. I mean, it was thick. And they called me Peanut Picker. And, you know, and kids can be cruel.
They can be.
Especially when you have all those city folks up there and here country boy that talks funny. And so they picked on me. I never said a word. Never said a word. But in that, there were several people that ended up as great hammers. Probably the best one in that juniors class was Tom Glassford.
Oh, wow.
Tom Glassford went third or fourth, I think. Never forgot it. He just, and I didn't, I rubbed it in for 30 years, too.
No, not you.
Oh, yeah. You know, I used to play all kinds of tricks on, I was a great old practical jokes on people that I had a lot of fun with.
I can't imagine, George. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things is I had a I had a spray bottle that I put a water and a little bit of cream instant that I would spray on their brush and then do it on top of the coat. You didn't spray it on a coat. You spray it on a brush. Well, you know that. You've been there. And somebody asked me what it was. I said, oh, this is super stuff. Yeah, there's only one place to get it. And it's something I make up just for myself. And so I wrote, it was big with a magic marker, super stuff. Well, do you know how many bottles of super stuff got stolen? And I caught this one guy, and I made a brand new batch up, and I took it over to him and handed it to him. I said, next time, don't steal it, just ask.
So you won the garden that year. When did you first start really working for a handler? Who was your first?
My first apprenticeship?
Yeah.
For Lena Basquette. $25 a week, 127 Great Danes and me. We went to the garden with 12 Danes. And I took them from the Roosevelt Hotel over to the old garden. This was at the old garden. And I took six at a time. And I looked like, what's his name with the chariots? Ben-Hur. And I had to go through gangland with the big high school there. There was all kinds of gang members there. And here this young kid going through there, and I got all the gangbangers there razzing me. I said, watch out, these suckers bite, man.
Yeah, I really didn't bug you. Six Great Danes.
But then having to take care of 12 Great Danes on the bench.
Oh, God.
and then that was the year Lena won this working group with Stormy Rudio. So I had a good, that was a good thing. That working there, my father disowned me because I had five swimming scholarships, Harvard, Yale, Cornell, University of Pennsylvania, and Indiana University. Wow. And I had two merit scholarships to any college in the country. And unfortunately, he never lived long enough to see me be successful. But if I ever had to do it again, I gave up going to the Olympics also because I had qualified for the Olympics in swimming.
Yeah.
And I would do the same thing again because timing-wise, I was able to work for some of the greatest people, and each one taught me something different.
Yeah.
Lena taught me it was a dog show. If you ever had ever seen Lena show a dog, it was a dog show.
Yeah.
Not with what the dog looked like, it was a show. Janie Forsyth thought I was with her for 3 years.
When did you start with Bob and Jane?
The year after I worked for Lena for 1 year and then went immediately. Well, I said, at the end of working for Lena, I said, okay, I'm going to do something that my father wants. And so I applied for jobs as a lab tech, a chemistry lab tech at DuPont and a couple of, DuPont hired me. And they said they put me as far through college as I wanted. I had the highest score they've ever had on anybody that applied there, all pending the physical examination. And they turned me down because I was blind in one eye. And so I said, well, somebody upstairs said, I'm not supposed to do this. And so then I was showing a boxer at the Potomac Specialty. Janie Forsyth comes up and she says, hey, kid, what are you doing in a dog down here? Where's Lena? I said, I don't work for Lena anymore. She says, you don't want a job? And I was working for Jenny the day that she moved from Holliston, Mass. To Southbury, Massachusetts. And worked for her for 3 years. She taught me how to run it like a business.
Yeah.
And
was she with Bob at the time or not?
No, no, she was, they were not married. I won't go into what was going on there, but I drove one truck and she rode in Bob's truck. And it was sort of like Lena, because with Lena, we would travel with maybe 10 or 12 Danes. I drive one car, she drive the other one. They didn't have vans then.
Yeah.
And then I worked for Art Baines. And Art Baines was an old setter handler from up in Massachusetts. And he taught me the difference between the three setters. And everybody thinks they're same dog painted a different color. And they're so different in temperaments and personalities and structure. And people don't understand that. 90% of the judges don't understand this. And hell, I can spot a, well, but then also that could be useful. And Art taught me this also. He says, if you go in to show a Gordon Setter, and there's a whole bunch of Gordon Setter specials in there that are the same, trim and show your Gordon like an Irish. Be different. Don't, you know. So my first Gordon special was after Nod's Yank of Rockaplenty, that I showed like a black and tan Irish. He won the group at Madison Square Garden, number one Gordon in the country for 3 years, shown like an Irish, until he was in the veterans class. And then he was shown like a Gordon Setter. So, and then I had 6 years with Bill Traynor. Great man, great man. He was probably gave me one of my, was one of the best moves I ever made, because he allowed me to do my own thing. He was not a believer in hands-on teaching. He was a true mentor. He guided. He didn't teach. He guided. He did not agree with the way I trim sporting dogs. But he didn't fight it because he was winning, so he didn't care. But if he saw me going off way off a little bit, he'd sort of nudge me back towards the center. But he allowed me to do my own thing, both in presentation. And my presentation was nothing like the way he did. The way I trimmed was nothing like. My deportment, nothing was the same. But he allowed me to be me instead of being it was a true gift. And then I had teachers that never knew that they taught me. And the foreword in my book states this: for my teachers knowingly and unknowingly, Dick Cooper, probably the greatest sporting dog man, total sporting dog man of all time. But he also taught me, don't show what you're expected to show. He showed a Labrador, yellow lab, made it number one sporting in the country, won the Quaker Oats with it. He showed it like an Irish Setter. Took the lead off, stretched it, there it was, elegant, the whole thing. Everybody else is showing labs, standing there baiting with it, this little dumb looking things. And here he is out there with this thing stretched. And I said, why? He says, why should I look like everybody else? And then one of the greatest centerman. Did you ever know Horace Hollins?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't
have a pleasure. Great man. Great man.
I knew his daughter very well.
Oh, well, she was Carol. A great lady. Carol was a great lady. Great lady. She was an AKC rep for a while.
Yeah. But she showed a lot up here when I was younger.
When I was working for Bill Trader, and we went to the old Sportsman show up in Canada, which I loved. Because of that show, you damn near had me as a next door neighbor up there, I tell you. Because in those days, I loved Toronto. I understand I wouldn't like it now, but in those days, it was a sleepy town.
It has its area.
You know, and the old Sportsman show was so Bill had this English setter he was showing, Sir Kip of Manitou, and we didn't have in a kennel. So I had to trim at the show. And we picked Kippy on the way up, going up to the Sportsman show, and we had a whole day before. So I'm there trimming on Kippy. Where Horace Hollins comes and sits down. Doesn't say a word, just sits there. I'm thinking, here's this. Damn, what? You know, I mean, when somebody that is your idol comes and sits down and watches you trim.
Yeah, I've never had that happen, George.
You know better than that. And I mean, it can shake you up, as you well know. And for 4.5 hours, he sat there watching it, never moved. Went to the bathroom once or twice, but... you know, then he came back and he sat and he watched. And he reached in his pocket and he handed me one of his old blue-handled stripping knives. Says, here, try this, you'll like it. He says, by the way, kid, you'll go far. That was the greatest compliments that I could have had. And I just stood there in awe, you know. I said, I just couldn't understand. But that's about where I got my education from. 12 years of full-time apprenticeship. So.
That's unheard of anymore.
You know? Oh, no. Exactly. I mean, I told my doctor, I went to school longer than you did, son.
So you left. When did you go on your own? Do you remember what year that was?
I went on my own in 1970 after working for Bill Trainer. Mary Ann and I got married, and 2 days later opened up Fieldstone Kennels that we leased from Bobby Fisher.
Oh, okay.
And Bobby was a dear friend. I've known Bobby for years, and so was Susie. I knew Susie Heckman also, too, and... So they inherited her mom's place. So his kennel in Pasadena, Maryland, he asked me if we'll... So we leased it for a month's rent, and we walked in there with a month's rent and $10 and blew the $10 on a couple of beers to celebrate. And that started Fieldstone Kennels. And to get it off the... In those days, you had to apply for a license. It took a year to get your license.
Your handling license.
Yeah, you had to be licensed in those days. And they didn't have limited licenses. It was a full-blown license. And I was originally on my own in 1961, at least to kennel in New Jersey, and turned my license back in and said, I don't know enough. And went back an apprentice. That was after leaving Janie.
Yeah.
I was on my own for a year, I guess, year and a half, and said, I need more. And I turned it back in. Everybody said I was nuts. I said, if you're gonna go anywhere and be anybody, you gotta learn it all. So So I turned it back in, and that's when I went to work for Art Baines. And so when we started Fieldstone, I worked at Holiday Inn at night from 11 at night till 7 in the morning, doing the night audit at local Holiday Inn. Ran and built the kennel during the day from 8 in the morning till 6 at night. And at in between 6 and 11, I'd walk neighborhoods and hand out flyers.
For the kennel? For the kennel?
Yeah. I would hand out flyers. I'd have these little plastic bags with dog biscuits. And I'd walk up and knock on a door and I'd say, do you have a dog? And if they said no, I said, okay, and I'd leave. And if they had a dog, I said, here's a bag of biscuits, you know, a couple of biscuits for you. Oh, you got two dogs? Here's two bags. And I'd chat up the kennel. I think I walked every community in the Pasadena, Glen Burnie area, Annapolis, Maryland area. And at the same time, built every single run. Chain link panels. I built every single one of them myself. And built the... Another one of my teachers was George Ward. He never knew it. But when I was working with Jenny, we stopped at George Ward's place. And I'd never seen a kennel like his. It was a box kennel. It was a terrier box kennel. And I'm 17, 18 years old. And I said, you know, why don't you just have slide doors? George says, no. He said, I want hands on my dogs every day.
Yeah, that's what he taught me too.
He says, you got to have your hands on them. He says, you got to be able to go out doing those runs and see the poop. He says, you got to be able to feel that dog if he needs an extra half pound or half pound less. So I built a sporting box kennel for my show kennel.
Yeah.
And every one of my show dogs was walked out every day. Three times a day they went out. And the runs were built specifically for the breeds. Setters, we had long tail runs. So they whacked their tails. Every setter run was 8 feet wide. It was 28 foot long. Do you know why it was 28 foot long?
Why is that, George?
If they were shorter than 28 feet, the dog would bounce off the end. He would run and bounce off the end.
Yeah, I get it.
If they were longer than that, they would gallop the whole, they wouldn't trot. But I could make 14-foot panels, put two of them together, 28 feet, and a dog would trot. And that's how I built. And then I had short tail runs, which were the Springers and English Cockers. And they could be narrower, but they were still 28 feet. So it was probably the only show kennel like that. I don't ever remember anybody's show kennel, except maybe my daughter Jane's down in Florida. I don't know where she learned it from, but.
I went to Fieldstone a couple times. I don't know if you remember. I remember being in your office and there was a picture of Yank on the wall.
Yes, I remember that.
I took it off the wall, put it on the couch, and took a picture of it.
Of what?
Of Yank going in the group of the garden.
Oh. Yeah, that was, first of all, I had to win the breed over J.D. Forsyth with Legend of Gale.
Jeez.
that's tough. And it was under one of Janie's mother judges. And Jenny walked out of the ring. Jenny was in tears. It was, and then in the sporting group, The group was Joe Tacker.
I remember that.
And Joe Tacker had beaten Yankee and Abreu twice before. So in between the breed and the group, I did some fancy trimming and trimmed them more like a Gordon than an Irish. I showed him like a Gordon in the ring, and he handed me the ribbon. He says, I like this. I says, I like this dog better than that old dog you were showing. He said, I didn't care for him. I said, thank you very much, sir. I ran like hell with that ribbon. And then I had one of your damn Canadians beat me for best in show.
Uh-oh.
Was with an old English sheepdog.
Oh, Malcolm.
Malcolm, yeah. Good friend of mine. And I walked up to congratulate him, and he was a Yankee fan. He absolutely loved Yankee. And I said, congratulations, buddy. He says, I'm sorry, George. I said, don't be sorry, relish it. You know, so.
Yeah, Malcolm. So, what's your favorite breed then, George? It's a tough one.
I guess you could say the English Pointer.
Yeah.
Because they're gentlemen. I mean, every pointer that I've had has been a gentleman. My daughter, Jennifer, breeds pointers. And they're all ladies and gentlemen. They love kids. They're just a great breed. They're, as an example, they're always sitting there beside you with their head on your chair.
Yeah.
Behind me here, there's a statue of a pointer on an empty chair. Got his head on an empty chair. That was done for a very good friend of mine, Mike Zolo, who went best to Garden with Deputy. When he passed, Dame Ribalta did this bronze. Marianne bought a copy of it for me. When Dame does something, she only makes 10. That's it. So I got, as a Christmas present, as I'm opening the package, there's my dog, Pointer Johnny, Margetta's Johnny Appleseed, who Mike Zello showed at the Futurity at the National and won the Futurity with him. The same day as he went best to breed with Bee's Knees.
Wow.
And I'm opening it, and here I'm looking at this pointer statue, looking at this empty chair. There's my pointer with his head on my chair arm. I said, Marianne, are you trying to tell me something? No, it would be the pointer. Now, the pointer is not, that's my favorite breed, not my favorite dog of all time.
Of all times, of the dogs you showed, who's your favorite dog?
As a person, personality, Yankee. All right, Yankee would never quit. His first best in show, it was like 105 degrees, 100% humidity. And I asked him to go, and he never stopped, and he probably won because of that. And it was he was a great person. He loved me. He showed for me. My favorite dog to show? No Brayer. Winslow the Foxhound.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, he looked like fun.
He was a fun, yeah, but I was just there for the ride. He didn't, I mean, you know.
Not at first.
Huh?
Not at first.
Oh, no. When I first got him out of the pack, he had never had a lead on. All he ever did was hunt fox for a living. He was 4 and a half years old. I put a lead on him. He says, what the hell are you doing to me?
I bet.
And he went upside down, all 4 feet straight up in the air, and that was it. Took me 9 months. And 2 days reading books at the AKC library by Huntsman, and then spending time at Mr. Stewart's pack talking to Gerald, their huntsman, on the mentality of the English foxhound, which is absolutely, totally different than any other breed that ever walked. They're raised differently than any other breed. And people don't understand this. You know, the English foxhound is raised as a house dog. They're not raised in a pack. They're raised as a house dog. And by farmers. And then they bring them back. They're just called putting them out to walk. And to get inside that English foxhound's head, you have to know their history. And this was a hard thing. So it took me 9 months just to get him in the show ring. And then it took me another 6 months to get him to show. I got one best in show picture that of me standing from 7 feet. That was the first time I ever had a best in show picture like that done, that I had the guts to do it. But then when he won the group at the Garden, I never laid a hand on him. You know, Thelma Brown says, show me the bite, please. I said, teeth. He went, ee. So it was, he was my favorite show dog, not person.
Yeah.
Not person, show dog, because he was his own person. I mean, you know, he was just him. And if I went to a hound show, they used to use him in the hound show, and he still ran opening day at the pack. And I could be 3 foot away, and he would never acknowledge my presence, that I was even there. Yet the huntsman could come to a dog show and stand 3 feet from him, and he would never acknowledge the huntsman's presence.
He knew his job.
He had his ducks in a row.
Yeah. I have to ask you, because he's one of my all-time favorite dogs, the Cayman Marquis. What was Chance like to have around?
It was a professional relationship. And the whole, he was a great animal. I shouldn't say this, but I'm going to.
If it's no good, I'll edit it. Don't worry. No, go ahead.
Okay. He had one of the greatest heads of any Irish setter, he and his father. He had a gorgeous neck and shoulder. Absolutely fantastic front and hindquarter. He could move like the wind. Too much so. I used to have to wear metal golf spikes at outdoor shows just to keep up with him. And he didn't like me. Never showed me any affection whatsoever. He'd be on the table waiting to go in the ring. And he was be playing with people and throwing his paws at him and nuzzling him and everything. And I'd walk by and he'd turn his head. He never showed me any sign of affection whatsoever in 2 years or 2.5 years that I showed him until the day his last dog show at the Garden. He was going home back to Canada. And I went into his big old crate to say goodbye, and he gave me one lick. And that was the only time he ever showed me any affection whatsoever. It was strictly a professional relationship.
Well, he's one of my all-time favorites. I have pictures of you showing him when I was a kid. I would go and take pictures of you showing Chance.
He was a great dog. It was he was different. He was ahead of his time. The first time anybody had ever seen a coat like his, or ears like his.
Ears for sure, my God.
Yeah, you know, to a fault. But, you know, it was, there was something that he was so much fun, and he loved the crowds. And I always let my specialist dogs play with the crowds. You know, most handlers, they don't want the, heaven forbid, that the people outside the ring should touch their dog. You know, well, that's so stupid. Who claps for the dogs when they're in the ring? The people outside. So you make friends with them. You know, use your head, stupid. You know that. I've watched you show your dogs, and you know, he'd stick his head out and he'd nuzzle. He'd love little kids and that type of thing. Of course, the kids loved him. So it come time for him to gate in the ring, and everybody's whooping and hollering, which was one of his downfalls, because the more people clapped, the crazier he got. Almost to the point where I couldn't control him, especially in the best in show ring.
Yeah.
So one day I called Frank Sabella. And I've known Frank Sabella forever. When I knew Frank Sabella when he had, first had Andy Clark show his dogs, and he didn't know the front end of a dog from the back end of a dog. And he showed a white standard poodle command performance, went best in show at the Gardenwood. That was a crazy dog. He'd hear the clapping and he went nuts. And I called Frank and I said, what do I do? How do I control him? He says, you can't. He says, you win by the sword, you die by the sword. And just thank God for those good days.
Yep.
And that's the
way
it
was. You taught me that. Huh? You taught me that.
Did I do that?
Yeah, you did.
No, I wouldn't do that. But, you know, in those days, handlers didn't mind helping other handlers, even if they were competitors. There are so many, I had so many handlers come to me and ask how to do something. Let's say they were specialized in terror, and that I would come and I would help them. And there was a lady from New Jersey. She's the wife of Gunther Bear, the terrier handler. She showed Afghan hounds. She had an Afghan hound she couldn't get the tail up on. Gorgeous dog. And I said, I'll show you how to get the tail up. She came to me. I'll show you how to get the tail up if you promise not to tell Gunther. And she says, okay. So that day I showed her how to get the tail up. And she beat me for best in show that day with my setter. But I felt good because it was like I went best in show, for God's sake.
I understand that.
And it was, I didn't mind teaching people. Because then I felt like then their success I was a part of. I don't know whether that makes sense or not. But
no, it definitely does. I've had that same feeling. So
the, you know, it's, there's just too many, you know, they want to keep things all secretive and all that sort of crap. But over the years, I had so many handlers help me. And so I figured I'd, you know, give something back.
Yeah, of course. On that same topic, what advice would you give a new handler or somebody who wants to be a handler or young handlers?
What was that again?
On the same topic of that, what advice would you give new handlers, George?
Apprentice at least 4 to 5 years. If you want to be any good at it.
Yeah.
If you want to be a hot shot, flash in the pan, go out and show right out of juniors. Oh, I would tell them, first of all, go to college. Or go to school, tech school, something to fall back on. because you don't know what's going to happen as in life. And you got to have something to fall back on. My daughter, Jane, went to college. Jane Myers.
Yeah.
You know, she turned out to be a pretty good handler. But people didn't realize that she went to college and she was a cytogeneticist at Johns Hopkins Hospital. And was doing research on birth defects and chromosomes and genes and all that type of thing. And to this day, she still keeps up her accreditation and everything. That if she can go back to, she can go back to being a histotech and being a slide cutter and that type of thing. But after she worked at Hopkins, she comes to me, she says, I'm going to Florida to mom's be a dog handler. After 7 years at Hopkins. And I said, be happy, be good at it. Well, if you know Jane, she's happy.
And she was good at it.
You know, but that's too many of these kids, they come out and they don't, and also go to work for more than one handler. And go to work for a handler not to try to make you into another one of them. And there aren't very many people like that. Actually, this day and age, there's not many handlers that can afford a full-time assistant like it used to be. But that was one of the advantages I had, was the different people that I worked for showed me different sides of the business. But that's what I would advise young. Also too, these kids coming out of juniors, they're going to be handlers. They have no idea how to care for a dog on a road, first aid on a dog on a road. They don't understand that. And like one time we were down on the Deep South Circuit, and I had a springer that was going to die. What do I do? Well, I have a good assistant with me, Dougie Holloway. He showed the dogs, and I went to the University of Alabama or Florida or something with the dog, and we pulled him out. That was Felicia's Etching. He ended up winning a bunch of Best of Joes along the way. But
yeah. That's an important part of our job.
Yeah, it was, you know, twice a year I got went paid for my veterinarian's time and got an update on first aid. And four times a year, my employees went and got, because of the boarding kennel.
Oh, that's a great idea.
And then twice a year, that vet would restock my first aid kit. And at dog shows, handlers would come to me. Not the vet at the show. They come to me. What do you got for this? What do you got? You know. And I don't know how many times I had to tube an Irish Setter who had bloated. Once I did a bloat needle on one. Veterinarian standing there watching me didn't know what the hell I was doing. And he almost fainted. I said, didn't they teach you some vet school? He says, no. I said, well, you got better find yourself another vet school, son. So anyway, that's part of what you got to be, a part veterinarian. You got to be part mechanic, part carpenter, part plumber, part electrician. You have to be at least an auto mechanic so you can get underneath there and fix those things, because you can't afford to pay
somebody. Or at least know somebody that can help you.
Somebody that can help, right. That's right.
So what year did you retire, George?
1991, June 21st.
And then you started doing your seminars, which you become world famous for.
Well, I had done seminars before, but not on a weekend basis.
Yeah,
I tried it out a couple of times. Decided I didn't want to go on the Florida circuit anymore. So in Florida, during January, I would do one or two. But normal before that, I did 8-week courses. My first seminar that I taught was in 1955, after I won juniors at the Garden for the Potomac Boxer Club. Two of those people in that class went on to be top boxer handlers. So actually I've been a teacher for a while. And I love teaching. I loved the interaction. And you can teach the basics in one day. Actually, in a half an hour, I can teach anybody how to set up a dog. It takes forever to teach them how to show one. People don't understand this.
So what do you think is your biggest achievement in the sport then? Is it teaching or is it showing? What is it?
As a teacher, my biggest...
What is your biggest achievement in this sport of dogs?
As a teacher.
No. You know, what is your biggest achievement? What are you most proud of?
As a teacher.
Okay.
As a teacher. As a handler, I didn't win jack. My dogs did. Mm-hmm. I didn't win I hate it when I hear handlers say, bull crap, buddy. You didn't go best in show, your dog did. He allowed you to hold on to the end of the lead. You know that? You got that feeling? You know, and there's only two things I ever won myself. Only two. One was best juniors at the Garden and being voted into the Professional Handlers Association Hall of Fame. That's it. My dogs are the ones that did it.
I know.
But I want to be known as a teacher, even though I taught differently than most people, but I'm so proud of accomplishments. I've got five students have gone best in show at Madison Square Garden, plus four other ones that I helped along the way that they would come and ask me for advice or whatever. I have one of my assistants as an all-breed judge, Liz Muthard, very proud of her.
Yeah.
You can see watching her judge, I can see me teaching her how to put hands on a dog. That's what I'm proud of. I'm proud of over 300 of my students winning all breed best in shows or national specialties.
That's incredible.
That's what I'm proud of. Am I proud of being able to hold on to a couple of dogs that went best in show? Yeah. But somebody else had to breed them. Good Lord had to make them look pretty. I didn't do that. Did I help along the way? Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
You know, did I? The other thing that I'm most proud of, and part of my teaching, is my philosophy on teaching, on training a dog. Too many handlers train their dogs to show like they handle, which is the biggest mistakes. Not mistake, because there's a lot of them that have been very successful. And I call them great mechanics. Your old boss was one of the greatest dog mechanics that ever walked, Bob Stebbins. A great mechanic. Every bloody dog he showed exactly the same way. he showed a golden retriever like a Doberman pincher. You know that. You were there.
That's so funny because he would often look at the schedule and say to me, okay, we have a break between 12 and 1. You go watch somebody. You go watch George. You go watch Gene Blake. You go watch – he always made me go watch somebody.
Oh, yeah. He was – I mean, he was one of my best friends. He was one of my best friends. I was sickened when what happened to him.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough his mother allowed me to do his eulogy. When I was having the same problem he did, he called me when I was in hospital every day. He and Perry Phillips, the only two. But anyway, to get back to the training, if I got a dog in the show, I had a training yard. It was about a half an acre, fenced. I had a chair in the middle. I go out there and sit in that chair and watch the dog for maybe 3-4 days, maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks. And I saw what he liked and what he didn't like. And then I would use that. And I would show the dog to him. Not to what I wanted. I showed to what he wanted. I know I've seen you do the same thing.
Well, I wonder where I learned that from.
I have not a clue. Probably some old guy, you know.
You know, you were talking previously about being yourself. I don't know if you remember, I called you one day and I was asking a bunch of questions and we were talking. And finally you said to me, don't try to be the next me. He said, try to be the best. You said, try to be the best you. You remember telling me that?
Absolutely. And that was about the same time I sent you a yellow sweater.
Yeah, I have that yellow sweater.
No, I told you that. You came down to watch me teach a seminar. The same place that picture was taken.
Yeah.
And it was, there's some advice is don't try to be me, be you.
Yes, you told me. Don't try to be the next me.
I told you. Same thing, Corky Vroom came in and watched three of my seminars before he went off to teach seminars. I gave him the same advice. And Norma Smith, I gave her the same advice. Of course, she couldn't be another me. She's too tall. She's not short enough.
Oh, all of us.
So.
But today's judges, George. But,
you know, that's. I tried to get all of my assistants trying to teach that.
Yeah.
My one assistant, Dougie Holloway. There'll never be another Dougie Holloway.
Yeah, that's for sure.
He's his own person. But, you know, one of the things I tried to, I said, don't try to be me. Don't try to trim like I do. Trim like you do. Develop. Take the time to develop your own style. There's a young fellow that used to work for you. I tried to get him to do it. Develop his own style. Don't copy anybody else. Do your own thing. David White. Did you know David White?
I knew David, yeah.
He ended up being a great handler of certain breeds.
Yeah.
And another, God rest his soul, Andrew Doyle. Andrew Doyle's his own person. He could never be me. Yeah. He wasn't skinny enough, you know.
Andrew and I travel a lot together. It was fun.
Oh, yeah. Andrew, never be another Andrew. Andrew, we called him Andrewisms. Hey, Andrew, where's something? He says, over yonder. Now, over yonder could be 2 foot away. It could be 20 miles down the road. When Andrew came to work for me, he was from Danville, Virginia. And you talk about a redneck. I mean, from the bowels of Central Virginia. And So he had an English Springer Spaniel. He wanted to be a dog handler. Are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, okay, because I'm not seeing you move.
Okay. I'm just listening, George.
Okay, so I'm showing him how to give a bath to a dog, to a Springer. And I said, now, this is how you do an anal gland in the tub. And Andrew stood there and he says, sorry, you want me to do what? But he was just, but he ended up developing his own style. He was his own person, his own trimming.
Yeah.
It took me 3 years, maybe 4 years, to get him to stop trimming Springers with apple heads and frog eyes. But he finally, you know, I said, and when he got his first Best in Show on a Springer, he called me up and said, you'll notice in the pictures there's no frog eyes or apple heads. So.
Judges, what do you think of the judging process?
You take a judge like Eddie Bivin, one of the greats. I put him in the same classification with Al Rosenberg. And he's a true student of breed type. Does not like excessive anything. And you can always predict what he does, whether you enjoy it or whether you agree with him or not. He's consistent. He had to give up his judging at the Garden because of a bad back. He would have probably done it if he could have judged those breeds on a ramp. And there's so much talent out there at this time. There's so many judges that haven't applied to people that haven't applied to judge because their backs or their arthritis or whatever won't allow them to do it. And the AKC is just sitting on it. And yet they'll let people that know how to work the system that, you know, I wouldn't let them buy a goat for me for that. You know, and that's the way I always, let me say, you know, what do you think of this person as a judge? And you know how I determine whether it was a good judge or not? Would I hand them $10,000 in cash and go buy me a dog? How many of those are out there that you would do?
It's true. Yeah.
Yet there are a lot of people out there that I would happily give $10,000 to. And, you know, a lot of old handlers were like that. There's a great dog man, Bobby Fowler. Did you know Bobby Fowler?
Yes, yes.
Great dog man. I would show him my new specials dog every time. But I got a new one to get a feeling, you know, his thoughts. There was another handler, I'm not going to name him because he's now a judge, that I would show him my dog. If he liked him, I sent him home.
It'll tell us.
You don't want to know who it is. No. Maybe someday I'll tell you. But as an example, he told me my foxhound was a pet. Yankee would never win a breed. Marquis would never win a breed. Okay. But there was a Springer that he looked at. And he loved him. I sent him back to wherever he came from, and another handler showed him and never won a breed. But, I mean, it was a standing joke, you know, but there is really so much talent out there that could be utilized. And I think part of the judging problem is too many dog shows. that they have to have the judges to be able to judge these shows, or otherwise, you know, they're not going to have anybody. But they're not utilizing the possible talent that is out there. There's too many people applying for judges as judges because it's their one time in their life they have something that they can tell somebody what to do and make a judgment upon somebody or a dog. They don't do it for the love of the sport. They don't do it for the love of the breed. They do it because it's a chance for them to show how great they are. And that's wrong. That's wrong. We've always had it like that, had people like that, but we didn't have as many of them as we have now, today. Okay, I'll shut up on that now.
Well, I have one more question for you, George.
Yes, sir.
If you hadn't been showing dogs or involved in dogs, what do you think you would have done for a living?
I would have been a scientist. I would have, as I told you, I had two merit scholarships. When I graduated from high school, my lowest SAT score out of 800 was 760. And that was taking physics, chemistry, calculus, data. In those days, they had a whole raft of different ones. I loved science, loved it. I mean, I just, maybe that's why I did a lot of my handling was done basically scientifically, and also why I was able to teach myself how to program computers and have Canine Bite software, which I enjoyed very, very, very much. My brother, I have to bring this up, my brother Bill is a better animal trainer than me. We would compete in juniors. I'd practice 3 or 4 days a week. He wouldn't practice. I go first in juniors. He goes second, but he'd push me and he wouldn't touch a dog. He can train a cat to do anything.
Yeah, there's people like that.
But he had to go to prep school before he got into Tufts University. He now is a head scientist for the company Juul that makes the vape stuff.
Makes what? Sorry, again?
He's head scientist for Juul vape.
Oh, okay.
Okay. He used to be senior research scientist for Raychem. He's got, I don't know how many, he's got a couple of PhDs, 4 master's degrees, you know, and yet I was a scientist in the family. He wasn't, but he enjoyed science and I enjoyed dogs better. So we went where our love was, not where necessarily where our expertise was. But I would have been in a science business or computer business or something like that.
Any last closing remarks you want to say before we say goodbye?
Yes. Something that's very dear to my heart. Those people that are showing dogs, always keep in mind, dogs are folks. Dogs are folks. If you go and you use that philosophy, whether you're a breeder, an owner, a handler, or a judge, you'll go far. But too many people in the dog game think of them as inanimate objects or things. And I think that denotes a great dog person from a schmuck. That's a little tough, but I'll tell you a story one time. Believe it or not, back in the day, I used to be a hothead.
No.
Yeah. I was a hothead. And this handler came from California to a show in Roanoke, Virginia, showing a dog for a very famous person, a terrier. And I beat them for best in show. And I'm going back to my truck.
Your dog beat them.
Excuse me, my dog beat them.
Gotcha. You got me all those times. I gotcha.
I gotcha, yeah. So his dog acted up a little bit in the show ring. Yeah, he's about 6'1", 6'2". And he's just has this poor little, was either a Welshie or a Lakey, I forget. And he's just beating the hell out of him. And I had somebody hold my dog. And I went down and I took the dog away from him and handed the lead to somebody. And I picked him up and I slammed him against the wall. And I said, "Don't you ever do that." I said, "If I hear that you ever do that again," I said, "I'll be on the next plane and you'll be in serious trouble." It's something I wouldn't tolerate. And Dougie Hallway is the same way. I think I taught him that. But just remember, dogs are folks. They got feelings. They're people. Yeah. They have feelings. They have good days. They have bad days. You know, I see people showing their dog and they says, and they lose. And they say, "Well, he didn't feel well today. He didn't show." What the hell are they doing in the show ring? Dog doesn't belong to be in there. Or they'll take a dog to a ring and they'll have diarrhea all over the place and they'll take him in the ring and show him for the sake of a dog show. Dogs are folks. That's the main thing that I would like to leave is dogs are folks.
Yep, they are. You get further asking them than telling them.
Huh?
You get further asking them than telling them. So.
Now, where did you hear that?
No idea, George. We're going to have to go because we're running out of time, George. But I really thank you for giving me this time to talk to you. Everybody's going to love this, I'm sure. So
I enjoyed it. And, you know, we could carry. Do I see my book in the background back there?
Yeah, you do.
I enjoyed it. There's, you know, we could carry this on for another 4 hours or something.
I know we could. I know.
And we have. And we have. But, you know, I think what you're doing is educating the public in so many ways. Is something that, and I'm so proud of you for giving, and I have said this in writing and in public, I'm so proud of you for giving back to the dog game that so few people in your position have done.
Well, it's all due to you, George. You instilled that upon me. So.
No, it's, yeah, but you
have. You guided me. How about that? You guided me. You guided me.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
Oh, we're frozen.
Yes, I did. And I'm really proud of you on it.
No, I appreciate that, George. It means a lot to me.
Okay.
Well, thank you again, George. And I'm sure we'll be talking.
Oh, I'm sure. I hope this turns out.
Oh, it'll be great.
There's a couple of spots in there that are shut down or whatever. So.
No, it'll work out. And give my best to Marianne, okay?
I will do that. This is Mother's Day, and I couldn't take her out to Mother's Day dinner, you know. So.
Are you gonna make her dinner?
Oh yeah, right. We have a McDonald's down the road that I can get it through the window or something, you know.
No, let her make dinner. She makes great dinner.
No, no, I know she makes great dinner, but she's not, you know, she's not going to do it. Thank you again, buddy.
All right, George. Good talking to you. Talk to you soon.
Okay.
Well, I want to thank George for bringing us into his house and letting us talk. It truly was an honor. They say imitation is the truest form of flattery. Well, thanks, Pops, for letting me have you to emulate. If you like what we're doing here at Will Alexander's Dog Show Tips, make sure you press the like, share, and subscribe. And if you want to find out what we're doing, you can go to willalexander.net. If you want to send me a message, go to dogshowtips@gmail.com. Thanks for coming by. Appreciate it.